This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
All right, listeners, welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise. We have an unusual lineup for tonight's show, or today's show, or the morning show. Like, I don't really know when people are listening to this show. So, you know, insert your time as applicable. But our special episode, only myself, Andrew the Alley Rabbit, and Phil up in Ottawa. Say hi, Phil.
Hello.
We're desperately trying to reach communications to the icebox.
Yeah, he ghosted us.
Kevin is bunkered down deep, fighting off the Wendigo. But hopefully we'll be able to patch him through with updates on his battle. We hope you stick around for Phil and I to chat indie comics. Independent comics. You know, indie, independent. I mean, basically that just means anything that's not exclusively big two. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. The Deliberate Noise Network is a family of awesome shows. So if you don't really jive on indie comics or you want something different, check out all the great shows. You'll sometimes hear some of us on Marvel Noise. Phil and I have both been on Marvel Noise in the past. I believe as it's the spooky month of October, there'll be some Halloween fun on Marvel Noise. Maybe we'll even have some Halloween fun here.
Well, our next episode should be a Halloween episode.
Whoa. We're back. That's how we started with Halloween. Maybe we'll start
so and continue. Let's not skip it this year. You know how cranky I get afterwards if we do.
You can find old episodes of Indie Comic Book Noise on our website. We do have a Twitter presence, Indie Comic Book N. So you can tweet at the show. Sometimes I tweet back and forth with the show. I understand we're also on Facebook, but personally I'm not on Facebook.
So I doubt really much goes on. Like, no one uses Facebook anymore.
I hope not.
Just moms, I think, do now.
That's it. They seem pretty not good in general. I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. But personally, you can find me on Twitter if you want and give me a hard time about the fact that I said something negative about your favorite comic or said something.
You are the negative one.
Or maybe I said something great about the comic you hate the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either way, it's all fun. We're all just here getting by. As I noted, along with our remit, we can also expand to adaptations and other reflections of the media. For instance, we often talk about TV shows and movies and video games every once in a while.
And you do a lot of books like biographies and things like that sometimes, too.
Yeah, I really enjoy... Yeah. Most of the nonfiction books I read are about the comic book industry. It's kind of sad. But I like reading about it.
It's interesting stuff.
We're still on the edge of, like, while many of the people have passed, there's still a few people that have been around, like, when this thing kind of started. So it's really cool to see the evolution of the medium. And I just said, but, the things have changed. I recently got that book on DC coloring and lettering.
Okay.
From just after 2000, just when computers had fully taken over. But they talk a bit about the history of it. And I really like the old-timey thinking about how books were made back then and how the differences between how they're made now. It's a fascinating
It was so much stuff. More interesting compared to, just using a computer now or something like that.
And not that I don't love the computer coloring, but because I'm an old guy, I have a lot of nostalgia. My sweet spot being the 80s for comics in general. So, I mean, I still read comics, but I really enjoy that era. So you're seeing towards the end some experimentation with computers, but basically it's still people, you know, coloring it by hand. So I'll always have a fondness. Now, you don't have as many options and the printing can create problems, but I think overall it was a fun, worthwhile endeavor. But I also get if you're like a younger person and maybe you're like, you know, I don't like comics from the 80s. I don't think they're objectively better or anything. I just feel like they're the comics that I grew up with in a way. I mean, the 70s, I guess, was the first one. But for some reason, the 80s, I feel like, is really
No, that's when I started reading comics, was the 80s.
Really? But I can go back a little bit and read new ones. It just, for those of you listening in the far future, I'm, right now we're having some COVID issues, so it makes it a little tricky to visit the comic shop for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we might have some news, Phil. We might have been able to patch through to the icebox. Oh, really? Kevin, are you there?
No. Is he being creepy?
He's being creepy. Right now, it looks like his microphone is not working.
Look at that. He just interrupts the show. How rude.
But anyways, that's the basic format. Mm-hmm. We just kind of pass it around, have fun with it. Normally,
do you not order books in?
All I've been doing is buying old books off the eBay. Okay. I should.
Because I've been ordering in some new stuff, but otherwise doing digital too. But like, I haven't gone to the comic store myself either.
I mean, I've picked up some newer mm-hmm. trades.
Yeah, lots of trades.
It's hard for floppies. I need to find mm-hmm. a reliable eBay source, I guess, for them.
Yeah. Because they have the subscription services, some sites where you like, you get a deal too, and you get all the new issues every week, you know?
True. But part of me has a secret. I guess it's living in denial. Part of me was like, mm-hmm. I'll be going back to the comic shop.
Yeah.
And just a couple more weeks and then months and months go. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just hard, I think, to realize. It's easier for me to pretend it'll be open back up.
It's a habit we've had for years and years and years, right? And to suddenly stop, it's hard. It's like,
yeah. And I also just thought it wouldn't. I mean, I knew it was going to last, but another part of me, I don't know. I guess if I feel like if I bow down and give up on the local shop, I just feel like I'm kind of giving up everything in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what, but I think Kevin, are you there?
Have you unmuted me?
Hey, you were being creepy.
Well, and you're like muting me.
We're lucky, folks. Kevin was able to patch through. He presumably defeated the Wendigo. And
wow.
Well, it's hard. Very late. You know, sometimes when you get in battling the elemental creatures of the North,
That's true.
You're not on a schedule.
We thought you died of COVID, Kevin.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I was recording experimental podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Something without us. He's getting ready to move on.
Experimental. I don't know if I want to know the subject.
Well, Kevin, all you missed was the intro. So you're right on time. We're going to start with some books.
And we're going to end with some books.
Yeah. All right. We're here free to start. Who wants to? I've got some books, Phil, Kevin. Who wants to start us off today?
I have zero books.
That's fine. Okay.
You pulled Phil, a me?
Do you want to go or you want me to go?
Sure. Well, recently, two things I've tried, number ones of that are just started up again. One's three issues in, one's five, is Chew.
Oh, Chew. Nice.
Second volume, I guess, and Nailbiter Returns, which if you remember was my favorite comic when it was going on.
That had those crazy covers that were so good. I remember one you got me on, Phil, that I thought was coming back was the Ice Cream Man, too.
Did. They had a few issues, and then they had the Quarantine Comic Special recently.
Don't they have all those Dr. Seuss covers?
And then they have another one coming out, too. Nailbiter? No, I don't think so.
No, the Ice Cream Man.
Oh, maybe. I never noticed if that's what they were.
I had that was one of the hot fads of the week where people were after the Dr. Seuss Ice Cream Man covers.
But yeah, Andrew, it's still coming out because the Quarantine Special was all the short. Like, I guess it's like an anthology of short ones they did during quarantine.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I don't think, I haven't read it yet, but I don't think they're about the quarantine or anything. Like, they're just their own thing, you know? It's just stuff they worked on. And that was just a pause in between the last issue, which has come out since the quarantine. I think two issues, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some hunting down or grab some trades when this is over.
Yeah.
Figure out where how to close that loop. But anyways, I distracted you from Nailbiter and Chew.
Well, yeah, first Chew. I know Kevin was a fan of that one, too. I never finished that off, but this one basically kind of follows. You didn't read this one, Kevin?
No.
Oh, you don't have interest in Chew anymore?
Maybe.
I would have thought.
I don't know what it is.
Oh well, basically,
I feel like some of those books. It's not that you wouldn't want to read more. It's just. I don't know.
That's kind of what I was going to say, because like out of these two returns, Chew, it's kind of like I had enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I
guess I would compare it to other series that ended, like Why the Last Man. Like by the time you got to the end, you were just like, not that it was bad or anything. You were just like, I'm done.
But Nailbiter Returns gave me the opposite feeling, where I was back in, like, and I was loving it. But yeah, basically Chew is just about his sister kind of being on the side of the bad guys, and then him, Tony Chew, is more of a side character, but he's going to be, like, I guess, on the other side of her, you know, not realizing that she's on the bad team. But yeah, I just couldn't get into it again. But Nailbiter Returns had everything I needed for sure. And that one was about about a town where like 16 of the worst serial killers were born. And by the end of the first issue, which is oversized, extra pages, and they bring all the killers back, like this, I guess, supernatural force or something, or maybe they make new killers out of people that, like, copycats, you know? But had all the returning characters, and it just, I was sucked right back in. And there's 5 issues so far. I've only read the first one, but I'm going to reread the first volume first, and then start getting into the second series.
It sounds like when a Phantom Zone jail comes to Earth or something, and then Supergirl's like, that's the season plot. I gotta go arrest everyone again.
Well, I'm sure it'll be much more bloodier than that.
Yeah.
But so I definitely recommend Nailbiters, but not Chew.
And so are you, you're just ordering these books?
These are digital, but Nailbiter, I'll double dip.
Okay.
Like, I have the issues and trades for that one. I'll definitely double dip for this. Like, I'll just do the trades. So a lot of stuff, I'm just doing digital, the floppies. But once in a while, there'll be, like, some indie stuff that I'll order in the floppies of. But otherwise, my physicals are going to be pretty much just trades now.
Yeah, it's sad. I got a couple of Kickstarters and a few trades rolling in. But as before, my wares for today are stuff that I've been pulling off my shelves.
And the new stuff, I'm mostly rereading stuff, because the new stuff, there's just not enough to satisfy me right now that I'm into. So until it picks up again, I'll probably just keep reading old stuff again and again, which I'm loving, because now it's not just collecting dust in my collection.
Well, for me, some of these I just never read.
Yeah, and that too, yeah.
There were just ones, or if I read them, I forgot them. Like, you know, because there are a lot of one-offs and goofy stuff like that. Well, do you want an old comic or a really old comic then?
Ooh. Well, might know the old, but I don't think I would know the pretty old. So I guess I'd go with old.
We'll see what he means by really old.
Well, I'm taking you guys back to the 80s. We're going back to the future.
So it's just old then.
So it's just old. Well, it's really old compared to the other one.
I didn't think you were going to read any Golden Age comics. Like, you always put down those Fawcett comics.
Well, also, those are not ones I'm going to be able to afford in any meaningful... Like, even a coverless copy from 1940 is not a cheap book, in my experience. Like, they're just hard to get those.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
I have a CGC Owl book with no cover.
Wow.
That's how I was able to afford it. But the comic I want to talk about today was from the 80s. but this is a reprinted version because it was collected. Now, what's funny is they started collecting and then the series looks like it just died as mm-hmm. far as the collections. But IDW collected a couple volumes, and the book is, and this is one I've mentioned before, a publisher I really like, but it's from First Comics, and it's The Badger.
Okay, yeah.
Now, what I didn't know back then, but I do know now, is it actually started with Capital Comics and then moved over, much in the way like those Pacific titles moved over.
Isn't Badger one of those properties that's had quite a few companies?
Oh, yes. Buckle in. It's been everywhere. But it was Mike Baron and a variety of artists that he worked on it. But Mike Baron's also known for Nexus with Steve Root, which was another one that was when I was a young man, I would read via First publications. So yeah, this is IDW. It's been like Devil's Due published it. And like it's been all kinds of places since.
Yeah. Didn't Malibu even have Badger for a bit? Or might.
Well, so what happens, like it ran for 70 issues. So like a very good run, this opening run. And those are the ones that I remember. Well, not all 70, but that's the collection. And that's what I believe this IDW set was starting to collect. But because they only did four volumes, like, you know, they're regular volumes. And so what do they hold, like 8 or 9 issues a piece? Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'm going to say... Because, you know, back in the 80s, and Phil can back me up a little, the issues are pretty thick. Like, they're not 18 pages or whatever we're down
to now. No, not the bullshit we get now.
So, but yeah, it's funny. So he had this run to, like, the, like, 91 of, like, okay, you know, we're running the first, those 70 issues. It's been an Image. It's been at Devil's Due. IDW even had some crossover stuff that was a Dark Horse attempt, I believe, that was connected. And yeah, so it's been everywhere. And I think there's a new one kind of coming out. Mark Baron is still around. So you can
follow. Well, I'm positive I've seen it in previews at some point before COVID, I think.
Yeah, and so they've done these little, like, but the second series are all, like, you know, 5 issues or 10. Yeah. Like, they're not a long, they're not like the 70. Like, that was a real serious... like 8-9 years or whatever. And I had not visited this book in forever, probably since the mid-80s. But I remember enjoying First a lot. It was kind of one of those indie companies I thought was really high quality. Like the books were always put together.
Well, they had the most books, didn't they?
I don't know. I don't know if... I feel like Eclipse had a lot of books, too.
Yeah. Oh, Eclipse, yeah, them too.
Yeah.
I feel like if we're going by number of titles put out, and that was another company I loved as well, too.
Me too, yeah.
I don't remember.
They were the big two, probably, right?
Well, I know Kimiko was also another big one that people loved. And then there were just all those ones that had a handful of books that you were going.
Yeah, like Arrow and Eagle.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this before, so apologies on that, but... I only had one shop out in the middle of nowhere, so distribution was also kind of, like, especially for those smaller companies, like, you might get a few issues and then you'd never see them again.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a great back issue way. I mean, eventually I moved over and did the mail order through Mile High. I was a nice member, me and two of my friends, because it was a volume discount. So when three of us went in, we were ordering, you know, like... 70 comics a month or whatever. So you got a really good discount with having the group, and then it'd come once a month and we just all dole them out and everything. But sadly, there was a lot of Marvel in that stack. I'm not lying. But the shtick was with Badger is he has like multiple personalities, and the Badger is just one of them. And it's like a low-level street criminal. Low-level vigilante. But Norbert Sykes is the main character. So his thing is he was comes back from Vietnam, but he knows how to fight. But so it's mostly robbers and people like that, but he runs into this, like, 800-year-old druid, and they meet in the insane asylum, and they end up teaming up together. And it's just kind of absurd But I really love, as you guys know, the super condensed storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So this team gets together very quickly. Like in the first issue, like it's the wizard, the badger, and then they hire one of the doctors right out of it. Because being a wizard, he cheats at a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And gives it at, like, the McDonald's Monopoly thing and gives it to the assistant. So by the second issue, you know, the team's together and they have the money and they go buy a giant castle somewhere. Yeah. And I just liked it.
As you do.
Like, in one issue. Now, it's a big issue, but it's all, like, it's all together already. And I can see some people, if you don't like that, like, it's that era, it's that style of telling. So if you don't like it, you're not going to like it. Like, that's a lot's going to happen. It's going to get jammed in. This trade is from, you know, maybe 10 years, a little over 10 years ago. So he talks about kind of his history with the character and how long it lasted and everything. And I like that part of it too. But in the early days, it's Jeffrey Butler and Rick Burchett are the art teams. And then Dennis Wolfe comes in. But like I said, this first one, I don't know, it's about 8 issues or so. And the other thing I like is it ends with Marvel used to have an official handbook, and DC had the same thing. And they do that for the Badger at the end of this, you know, where it's got like the column and his name and alias and history and then a picture of the character. But yeah, so they get together. The wizard is trying to extract his revenge. 800 years ago, he was plotting, and the other druids didn't like he was creating so much problems that they put him under the spell that kept him trapped until the modern era when the badger hooked up with him. So it's funny, he's trying to get back to his realm, and then they mix it up with these corporate. It's just like a weird side character who's into hand-to-hand combat and an 800-year-old wizard and like their doctor assistant sort of documenting it all. And so it's a really kind of offbeat mix of things that happen really fast. And I hadn't read any of, I don't know that I'd read any of these early issues anyways, but I certainly came into the series a little bit later to begin with. So for me, these might be a first time reading these, but I forgot that frenetic pace of just crazy stuff always happening and always turning around. And I really enjoyed it. But there's no way, I don't know. Part of me is like, do I go onto eBay and buy like the job lot of all 70 of them?
Well,
yes. Yes, you do.
Because
you have to, because when are you, if you could find it now, like when are you going to get a chance again? Like who knows?
Like, because these aren't on Comixology. Like I really kind of sad that I feel like some of this,
oh,
and maybe there isn't a market for it or people wouldn't want, but I just feel sad that so many of these kind of cool indie 80s stuff
just are gone forever, right? It kills me.
Just flop. And you can piece, like, they're not expensive, but it's a, you know, some a couple bucks an issue or here or there.
I got all mine in quarter bins, 50 cent bins, that kind of thing. But they don't, but that was years ago, right?
Yeah, like,
they don't,
I feel like
it's not the same now.
Yeah, I feel like those books have now moved to dollar bins and $2 bins.
Really?
And, or just people's houses, you know, like they're all gone. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I usually see them in the bins.
Yeah, I never. I have forever.
Because I feel like there isn't a lot of demand for it anymore. But I really liked, the other reason it was famous for me was Badger was the first Marvel Comics independent comic book company crossover.
Okay.
The Epic imprint had a book, Coyote, which I really like.
Yes, I have that one. Yeah.
Coyote's most famous because it's, I believe it's Todd McFarlane's first published work.
Yeah.
But I really like it. I have a page, not a Todd McFarlane page, but I liked it. I think I have a Steve Lealoa page. I liked Coyote. It was one of those Marvel, Epic was like their indie imprint where they were given creator rights and it was fun. And a crossover with Badger. And to me, that was like probably my two of my favorite companies first in Marvel. And I never thought Marvel would cross over with an indie. Like, that seemed crazy. And I guess, I don't know. I mean, we count Epic toes the line. It's not like it was the mainstream, but still, you know, Epic had mainstream Marvel characters that appeared in it. And an Epic character was crossing over with Badger. And I just thought that was cool. And so I always had a fondness for the character. It wasn't my favorite first title, but that alone gave it like a place in history, so to speak.
Yeah.
So anyways, I think if IDW had finished this collection series, that would be a fine way too. But I think they only did about 4 volumes, which is like a third of it. You know,
yeah, roughly. It sucks because Boom fucked me on Hellraiser Masterpieces, the Clive Barker ones, because where they were reprinting all the old Hellraiser comics, they only did 2 volumes, so and like you didn't even have finished storylines.
Yeah, and this is I like it. Like it's a pretty basic. It's a soft cover. They do reprint, have the covers. They also have the one thing in the back, but there's not really a lot of bonus material in this thing. I was just like, it's kind of a shame that there's no, like, all there is on this is, like, the floppies, really, if you want to get it. So I've been deliberating, putting one more giant job lot of comics on the...
Have you checked out their prices or anything? No.
Well, if I want to be lazy and just get... You're going to pay a little bit more for the complete set. They're sellers that are smart, and they put together giant runs.
Well, that's so, what I love. Yeah, I would love to get that like that. Yeah.
And so I saw one. You pay a little bit more because you're paying for the convenience of not having to search hunt it down. And also, there's probably, I don't know if maybe that Epic crossover comic is worth something, or First did their own. They had this Crossroads event where they crossed over. So there are all kinds of... There might be some random issue that's like a $4 or $5 issue or something. You know what I mean? That screws up the lot. It always seems like there's one or two in these long runs that have some collective first appearance of some weird character or whatever that you're better off with. But yeah, I'm deliberating because the other thing I can do is maybe get the trades and then just get the rest. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do it or not. It's a lot of...
The fact you're thinking about it this much, I think...
Yeah, it probably means I'm going to do it. I mean,
let's be honest. You got to follow your heart. Do what I would do.
I mean, just I went crazy, and for our related sister podcast, I have bought a ton of the 2099 Marvel.
Good investment. I had fun with those series at the time. I don't know if they hold up. But.
Like an insane amount. Now I don't know if I want to recollect the first comic. Well, some of them have, like Whisper was a title I liked, and that did get collected mostly. The other thing is I don't know how many weird side products. Well, look, Andy, don't go crazy. Never mind. We're going to table that for now. But anyways, I like, if you like 80s indie books, Badger's fun. And if you just get an issue, that storytelling is evocative of what you're going to see. And I don't mean just like it had different art teams and stuff, and it's not a knock against them, but that kind of frenetic pace and the crazy characters and how they push the story through, I feel like I remember it to be the same. Mind you, I've only recently read the first beginning of the issue, so maybe by the end of the series it was different. And certainly I didn't hang around till the very end. So take with that a grain of salt, but it was really fun for me turning back the clock to the mid-80s to read some, well, early 80s in this case, but for me, when I jumped on the mid-80s madness and reprint. Yeah, I just wish, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's not worth it. I don't know how much work it is to put this stuff into digital. I guess, or if it would be worth it, maybe. But yeah, I love the coloring from those days and just everything. And certainly in these beginning, like I said, a lot of just action, panel, very few. You know, this is the era of, not that double page spreads and big spreads aren't unheard of, but they're rare. They're like some specific moment that you're trying to emphasize, or maybe that opening page, you know, where you're setting the tone or something, but very much more tendency to have a lot more panels and tell the story that way. Rather than, you know, what I tend to think of like that mid-90s where you have some that are just these beautiful, like, big splashes. Splash after splash after splash.
Mm-hmm. Are you sure that's the 90s?
Is that more than 2000s? Now, too.
I think that's now,
I think that's the 00s. They're like, I got to show someone being pushed down the chairs and down the stairs in a wheelchair for like most of the page, and then have half a page of someone continuing to go down the stairs, and then you got to show the person reacting, and then, you know, you've done a few pages.
Yeah, I don't, that whole, we're going to have the action, the reaction, and then the reaction to that, it's fine, but I don't have a problem with the having that all in like a panel. I don't know. I feel like they've really lost something with the idea that time is what you make of it. It's not a movie where you're reading storyboards and you need to see this happen and then this happen and then that happen. You can put it all in the same panel or whatever. Like, we'll figure it out. But I don't want to... There are tons of great new books. I'm just, because of my situation, reading older books because that's what I have. And that and Kickstarters. And I'm trying to parse out the... So it's not like my weekly Kickstarter.
Well, yeah, Kickstarter. Then you have to wait a year. Yeah.
You know what's disappointing is when you're all ready to go for a Kickstarter and then you realize it only ships within America and you're like, oh, yeah. It kind of takes a wind out of your sails.
Sadly, I don't have that problem.
Naturally.
Because I'm in America. But it is, I do feel like Kickstarter is really everyone's turning to very quickly. And I did back, I don't know if this will make it before it ends, but Encoding Bushido is one I've backed by a local comic book artist. If it's still open, or maybe even if it's closed, I'll put something in the show notes about it.
What's it about?
It's about, well, I was deliberately waiting till the book came in, because I've actually bought...
You kickstarting stuff without even knowing what it's about?
No, because I've gotten floppies from the, you know, like, he's a local guy, so at the local... Mm-hmm. Back... let me start. A long time ago, Phil, there used to be this thing called comic book conventions.
Yes.
Where you would leave your house and see people selling books.
People?
Yeah, people. There are other entities that are humans and they... Yeah, but... So I used to collect... He was... He'd had other titles, and I think I'd reviewed some here, but Encoding Bushido. And you can go find it on... Comixology, but obviously I wanted like the real thing, but it's like a alternate future of Japan
where, oh, cool,
you know, mm-hmm. And it's got,
oh, do they live in a orbiting satellite or something with, there's a dragon and everything.
So I think it was before he started this series, but years ago, an early show when I just started going, he was there and I bought his book and he was doing very cheap sketches. So I got a sketch, a martial law sketch. That's how old it was when all my sketches were martial law. And I just really liked it. He's a special effects guy. He worked on like Battlestar Galactica and stuff like that. So I like that. Clearly comics are a labor of love. Like nobody's leaving TV work for the hot big money of comics. So I was, but he's a local guy. I see him at the local shows. He's always nice. One time he even gave me a little, he gets into 3D printing and he gave me a free little 3D printed model he did and everything. He's a nice guy. Like, I always like buying his stuff. And so when he was doing Kickstarter, I was like, oh, I'm definitely backing this thing. I gotta get the print. But I will drop a, like I said, even if it's closed, I'll drop a link in the thing. But I'm trying to get better about keeping on schedule, peek behind the curtain for those fans.
And so this comic's done. It's just a Kickstarter to get printed then, right?
Yeah.
So that's that means you won't have to wait too long either, probably.
Boy, what a race to go to. I'm saying between me editing and getting Kevin to post this episode before this closes, but yeah. So just... Yeah, so it's fun. I'll have it there. And he has all kinds of different crazy stuff if you want to go over the top. Lately, I know Super Steve is smart and picks up art and stuff, but I don't know. Lately, I've just been going pretty basic on my Kickstarters. I usually just, in the beginning, I went with crazy stuff, and nowadays I like getting the book, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah. The other thing I like is that if you're into process, he's very process oriented. He's got tons of videos about how he does it, what goes on behind it, and he does it all. Like it's a one man shop. So if you're interested in all the coloring and lettering and all that stuff, it's all there. And somewhere I got to dig out where I have the print issues of this stuff too. Cause I do have some, I've bought print from this guy, but yeah, that's something I wanted to throw out there. I like putting those things in so that when I blow the deadlines, it stands out
now
forever.
Now you have to get this edited.
Except I won't, Phil. No. Don't put bad deadlines on me. All right. Do you want me to keep going? I feel like I've been chatting forever here.
Kevin, you got nothing today?
I started reading something and then I fell asleep.
Oh,
no, it's not good. Not a good week.
That's probably might not be a good comic either.
Yeah. A ringing endorsement is what I was thinking. You're having trouble sleeping.
there's a legendary story where I remember, like, I really like Casanova. The Fraction Baugh Moon series, but I don't know, something about that first issue. I fell asleep three times, and it was a slimline format. It's only 16 pages, and then it wasn't a bad issue. It's just whatever reason, I just picked the wrong time to immerse myself in that dense, crazy world.
All right, well, if I feel bad, this is an Andy-centric episode.
Well, no, I have. Well, the only other thing I've been reading is I've been reading Backlash again, which was my favorite Image character at the time. Do you know Backlash?
Seems like he would be really popular now.
I think the name, but I don't know that I've read any.
He was a Wildstorm character. He was part of Team 7, Stormwatch. But nowadays he's used so little, but he was the guy that he had tentacles, psychic tentacles that came out of his hands.
Oh, sure.
He had kind of a black and white costume.
Kevin gives me a hard time talking DC, and now Phil's just going right into DC.
No, this was Image at the time. This was still Image. This came out in 1993 or 1994, I forget.
Yeah, it was nothing more indie than selling your company to DC.
But other than that, though, I did get these aren't comic books, but anyone who's into retro games and stuff needs to get these books. It's from Bitmap Books, and basically, they're in the UK. I got my books in 2 days, and the way they package them is beautiful. But they're these beautiful books. These make the one I got is The Games That Weren't by Frank Gasking, and basically, it's just this huge, beautiful colored book where they go through all these games that had maybe financial problems or ran out of time, just different reasons why these video games didn't come out, like a Green Lantern game, all kinds of stuff. That's the only superhero one, I think. And then I also got a Nintendo and Famicom visual compendium, where it's same idea, goes through all the different Nintendo games back in the day.
The one about how Star Fox 2 didn't come out, that blows my mind. They're like, here's an almost fully completed game.
Yeah, that's in here, I think, but I haven't read that one yet.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but yeah, Kevin, I think you would like this book a lot. I would totally recommend it.
From it sounds like
books.
It.
Yeah, just these beautiful, it's better than anything you can get at Chapters or whatever, or Barnes & Noble or wherever you Americans use.
We've closed all our bookstores.
Oh.
We're done with reading.
Still definitely better than there.
Yeah, you have no telephone booths, no newspapers. What else are you missing?
Yeah, it's done. You basically have to just speak in grunts and emojis are all we handle now.
And
well, it got a lot of...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it got a lot of grief here, but I really liked on Netflix, they had a series called High Score, which was kind of about video games. Oh, I didn't watch that one, but I heard, A lot of people are like, oh, it's so basic, only idiots. And I'm like, I play video games, but I didn't know about some of the stuff. And look, I'm not an expert, but for me it was perfect, because I didn't know about some of the people they chose to feature I really liked. Like, I don't remember those Nintendo contests and the guy that was on MTV playing the video games and all that. Like, I kind of miss that part of video games. And it covers a lot of the old stuff, too, which I like. Some of the text-based stuff and things like that.
Yeah, the old stuff I don't like playing anymore, but I do like reading about it or seeing, a documentary or something.
Yeah.
There's that weird division where I'm like, I wouldn't play the early stuff, but I'll play... like video games up until everything becomes polygons. And I find like, it's something weird about like 8-bit, 16-bit, I can look at fine. Polygons look terrible. And once you move past polygons, it's like I can play again. It's just something about that in-between thing. I was just like, man, this looks like that is the worst looking stuff to me.
And yeah. No, I agree with you there. Yeah. You mean like PlayStation era kind of?
Yeah. Like, but the stuff before and the stuff after is fine. Mm. It's just, I don't know.
No, I
something about it.
Some for me, it's again on that nostalgia. Like they talk a lot about Space Invaders, and I remember the local college had the Space Invaders arcade. Like they didn't have an arcade, but they had the game in like the student lounge or something. Because my dad taught there, I could go there as a kid, and it was just kind of cool seeing the Space Invaders. Like I remember that because it was so old, like it burned into the screen. Those old games were not. Yeah. Well made so that the different images would just be burned in, and some of the old text-based games, they don't mention the Zork series or any of that, but they mentioned similar games to that I remember, and covering some of the history and those people behind it was really fascinating to me. But like I said, I'm sure some, and the scope of it was, like I said, from old games up to, you know, Doom and modern games and things like that. I just thought it was fun, well made. It's from the same. If you like the Toys That Made Us,
I'd love the same people. I love the He-Man episode of that show.
But the same kind of like, we're gonna find interesting people to interview. We're also gonna make jokes and take like what used to be the B-roll when we're interviewing the subject, and we're gonna cut that in to make a joke. Like the interviewer's not answering a question; they're just staring off in space. So they'll cut that in to make a joke and things like that, which I don't really. I like, but I can see how some people are like, well, I want a more serious documentary. I don't want this jokey stuff. But I think the jokes are fine. Or they have people reenact. Like some of these guys are reenacting their... the one guy that was... he answered phones on the helpline. So they had him put his old jacket on and put on a wig and pretend he was back there. Answer. I never called any of those 900... learn how to, or maybe they weren't, I don't know. 900.
No, I never called one, but I know someone that did call one, so that's my
did they get help? Did it work for them?
Sometimes it's kind of sketchy, the things, because you're like, well, I need to go to the room with the thing, and then they're just like, what?
Well, this guy talked about he cheated. He put the answers, he wore sunglasses and wrote little answers because they made him take a test, and he had it written taped to the inside of his sunglasses.
Or then if they have like some map of the game, but it's like that never made it over to like different versions of the game.
Oh, even nowadays, I mean, most of it's online, but we like to buy the strategy guides, and it is fun when they've made a change to the game.
Yeah.
And so I remember in Fallout 3, we spent a lot of time looking for this thing. And then finally you go online and you're like, yeah, I never made the final cut. And so you're like, oh, that was a great 20 minutes we spent looking for this ace, you know, this item to pick up. And it turns out they missed it. But that's part of the fun of like, you know, it's a moment in time. But
our another set of books I'm collecting too, like floppy versions, is like catalogs of old toys. So it has like every Transformer or whatnot. Those I'm kind of having fun with a bit.
But the latest strategy guide we bought for the Animal Crossing game is nice because they have a link.
I didn't think they made strategy guides anymore.
Yeah, they have a link to the internet where they send updates. So like when they update stuff, you can get updates online. So that was kind of fun. It's kind of fun to go through them. Like they're usually well made.
Well, I kept one for, I have one still on my shelf here, Brave Fencer Musashi. I love that strategy guide.
And sometimes they have funny jokes in it or just cool behind this. I don't know. I just think they're really fun. Obviously, online is better. You can go to YouTube or look stuff up or whatever. But
no, in the book is so much nicer.
Yeah. As we turn into video game noise.
I know, but who cares? We're off the rails, but at least I had books, right?
Usually it's like we turn into like DC noise, but I don't think we've turned into video game noise.
We've talked toys as well.
Oh, but that's kind of tangentially related.
And lots of Mega Man, because it's comics.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how many video game comics there are, but we never get to see them all the time. It's like Japan, it's like, oh yeah, we'll just make all these comics based on all these games. And it's like, I want to see more of that.
I'm really surprised they didn't, Valiant didn't have a big Bloodshot game for the movie. Like a one of them AAA or whatever they call it, like a big budget. Because that would be a good way to get people. And it's a character that lends itself to a video game, right? Like,
they probably had a cell phone game, I'm sure, maybe.
Like
aren't they like re-releasing that the Acclaim Shadow Man games?
Oh yeah, that was a good game at the time.
Yeah,
I didn't know. Was there two of them? I thought there was only one.
Might have been. Maybe I'm thinking Turok.
Might be thinking of Turok, but yeah, the Shadow Man game was pretty good.
Yeah, I know there was at least one Shadow Man game.
Mm-hmm.
Or at a minimum, like, put some skins in Fortnite for the character or whatever. Or just get it in the, like...
Yeah. So
it just seems like that was an entryway that they missed out on. Because that thing is practically a video. Like, he kills... Like, he shoots guns and regenerate, like...
Yeah. I feel like they made a deal with some company to make stuff like that, but I don't know if that went anywhere. Because all I've ever seen is that... mobile Harbinger Wars game that they did.
Yeah, that's right.
And nothing wrong. Look, I play some mobile, but I really feel like the big, like you get a good console that just feeds into the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, it can be, like I said, it can just be, just buy some old game and put Bloodshot skins over. You know what I mean? Like, it's, need to make, like, the most cutting edge game. At, like, it's a guy that shoots stuff and heals. Like, there's a million.
Like over top, like, a Marvel Ultimate Alliance type game with the Valiant characters. Yeah. Something like that.
I just feel like you can cheat a little bit. Like, it's a movie tie-in game. No one's expecting it to be Red Dead Redemption or something. Like, it just has to be a fun game that features your property prominently and people can enjoy it.
You want something weirdly Super Mario Brothers 2. You're just like, what? What happened here? This is obviously a different game.
I'm probably the only person on Earth who likes the Super Mario Brothers live action movie.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, one of these things, the comics feed the movies, feed the video games. I just feel like you get it all... moving
full circle,
especially if you're trying to build that shared universe. Like, that seems like a great I don't know.
I know Kevin won't admit it, but Valiant's dying off.
They are.
Yeah,
did you know comics were dying off?
Well, no, it's because Valiant, they have less and less books all the time. It's just not the same.
No, they're actually getting more and more books now.
Oh, there are more coming out. Good ones, though.
We're getting to the point where more and more books are coming out now.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to start getting books, I guess. I guess I need to come up
with the fact that... I think so, because you're getting too down about it. You need to get ordering some floppies just to feel them in your hand again, you know, some new issues.
Rub them all over.
Oh, believe me, I'm... I'm drowning in floppies, but they're all old books off of eBay.
Yeah.
As the bricks show up. Well, it's also... Well, the other thing is, there's... kind of be positive, but you can just get great deals. Like, they're so much cheaper. Like, I'm usually paying like a buck a comic for most of these bricks, you know. Oh, some of the rare ones you got to go to. Maybe I get angry when I have to pay $3. And I'm like,
hey, I can't get new books. You never said you got that Manifest Destiny thing yet.
Which one? The Manifest
Destiny. The last one?
I don't know.
That's got to be at least $3.
Yeah. Well, I had to pay $3, I think, with shipping. Well, the other thing is you're paying more for shipping. Yeah. I got some of the last X-Men 2099. And the other thing is, like, I'm not being as patient. I probably could have bought that as an entire job lot instead of buying it in little job lots. Mm-hmm. But I also want to start putting it together, you know? Like, I don't want this. This isn't a project where I want to take 3 years. I want to get it done.
Yeah, no, sooner. No.
Like, because I'm reading these. I don't have my regular weekly or biweekly load to distract me. Like, this is what I'm reading, so I'm devouring them at a pace that's better. But on the other hand, at least I'm reading what I'm getting, unlike the old days where sometimes stuff would just sit around.
Well, yeah, you're more appreciative now, right? Like,
yeah. All right, well, should I talk about an actual comic I have read?
Yeah, you still have the old one, don't you?
No, this is the 2007. I don't know if you guys remember Platinum Studio Comics. Platinum Studio
Comics. I do, but I can't think in my head what they've done.
Yeah, Men in Black. Good Platinum Studio.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Cowboys versus Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, boy.
So I picked up Watch Dogs. This is, I believe it's a...
Don't know that one.
One shot. I don't know. There might be more. But what I like is it's oversized, like wider.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a little bit taller, but it's mostly like, it's like an inch taller, but mostly like 2 inches wider. So it's like a big, kind of like a European style. Like those European album comics they sell. But this is Fred Van Lente and Brian Cirilla from 2007. Brian Cirilla, I think we talked about the Secret History of D.B. Cooper that he worked on.
Yeah.
But he's also done, you know, Marvel, DC, Indie, all that. He's a well-known. This would have been, obviously, earlier in his career. And same with Fred. But what's interesting is it's very much like, I enjoyed the comic, but it's very much like this is ready to be adapted into a movie type of comic, which is
like Cowboys and Aliens and Men in Black.
Yeah,
wasn't
like
that their MO?
Yeah, it feels like this is like, oh, it's a good story, but it's like a guy who moves, him and his pregnant wife move in, and they get a big house, but it's in a bad neighborhood. So he ends up mixing it up a little bit with one of the local drug dealers. And he tries to, you know, make a stand. And by making a stand, he comes into contact with this other guy who encourages him. And they're like, oh, we need to be a team. You know, we need to clean up the neighborhood. But it turns out the other guy's into some real crazy stuff. Like the other guy's like a full-on, like, Nazi conspiracy guy. And the guy gets sucked into it. So then he's stuck. So he forms this group, the Watchdogs, who are striking, but taking back, you know, the neighborhood from the creeps and the drug dealers. But because the other guy ends up disappearing, and he was one of those, you know, that's in movies where like, oh, the friendly guy you met. And then when it all turns to ash, like, turns out he was never really who you thought he was. Like, he didn't live in that house. He didn't have that job. It was all a fake. So it's looking like our main protagonist is going to be left holding the bag for running this Nazi organization that's now going to, that's escalating their vigilante activities. So as a result, he's forced to team up with the drug dealers to take down the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And so just a fun, like, it's completely, like, I can totally see that as a movie. You know, you have the, like, first it goes, and then you see him rooting and taking on the drug dealers, then finds out his partner's really a bad guy, he discovers, and then he's got to go back to the, like, it just felt that way. It's a little, it feels kind of on point, too, with militias and vigilantes and crime and everything. It's a little, what's the best way? Kind of over the top, though, like a movie would be, you know what I mean? Like, heightened. and everything's on 11 in a way that I think that maybe if it was a story told now, it would be paced out a little bit more and a little more realistic, a little less like at 11. I didn't really mind it, but I also wouldn't mind if they had kind of slow rolled it, but that would make it less movie-like. Well, more thoughtful, like less like a kind of action movie with a twist type of thing, or suspense thriller like this was originally. Maybe a little bit more.
Is it a one and done?
Yes, it feels like. Yeah. I mean, because it ends up, you know, he teamed up with the drug dealer, but then at the end, the drug dealer ends up getting arrested by the cops because, you know, he's a drug dealer. Yeah, it was just a fun, like I said, like I'm reading some thing that was going to be a movie and never made it. But I think it totally would work.
Well, it seems like all their comics were meant for that, right? So
yeah. And I think Chirilla and Van Lente do a fun job of it. I'm sure, given that they've both been in the business now much longer, I'm sure they would polish it a little bit more. But I feel that kind of heightenedness and that energy makes it feel more just like a, like I said, like a a suspense kind of, not a real heavy one. You know those kind of dumb movies you watch on a Friday night where, like, there's a twist and maybe you see it coming, maybe you don't, but you don't really care because you just want the thrill and the vicarious excitement.
Yeah.
But not, you know, Alfred Hitchcock or anything. Yeah, so Platinum Series is still around, I guess.
Are they? Like, they still have books coming
out. But I don't know how many comics they have coming out. But they're around as like a media concern. And they claim to have all these properties you can license. And I mean, look, Men in Black just had a reboot. So it's clearly like a worthwhile, that property alone would keep your company afloat. And Cowboys and Aliens.
Nobody was going to buy a Men in Black comic.
No, but I meant as far as like, it launched a movie. Maybe they could do a TV show. Like, it's a valuable IP, it feels like. There are other stuff I don't know. I guess the guy behind it was at Malibu when Malibu agreed to publish those early Image comics. So we use that to claim, like, oh, I was the first publisher of Image and, you know, then bootstrapped it into having Men in Black and the Cowboys and Aliens. Like, they feature that a lot when they discuss the company. But they also have all this other stuff that I don't, I'm sure I've read some of their floppies, but I haven't seen them in a long time. So I don't know if now they're just like, hey, they also have a webcomic hosting site they took over. Phil, have you found anything about this?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I was looking it up, but I found not a list of their combo. Here we go, titles published. So their last one I see here is 2008.
Yeah, so wow. But they still have TV shows and stuff.
Here's one to 2011. 12. So yeah, I guess they're still going.
Yeah, but they're they also got the rights to Drunk Duck, which I guess hosted webcomics.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
But that would have been, again, you know, mid zero zeros. So I don't know if they're even an existing webcomic host. But yeah, so it was just fun. One of those ones I had stuffed on a shelf somewhere, and I was like, Fred Van Lente?
Brian Chirillo? They don't have Men in Black.
Like, they're two big names.
Yeah, they don't have Men in Black, though.
Well, if you go to their website.
Oh, they do?
They talk a lot about, like, their actual official website. They splash on a lot. Now, maybe they got the rights after it or whatever.
That's weird. This is Wikipedia I was looking at.
And so I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on Platinum Studios. I haven't seen do them or whatever. Next time. But I did go to their website to see, like, oh, are they still doing stuff? And yeah, it felt like it was a lot of, hey, we're licensing X, Y, and Z if you're interested.
Yeah.
Don't forget Cowboys and Aliens. And
well, that's old, that movie, though.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that was a big, major...
Like, I think you're looking at a website that hasn't been updated since Cowboys.
Well, he does like to go to those websites.
I do, but I think they still have... you know, they still update their copyright anyway to be 2020. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they have all these other properties I don't know that well, like the Macroverse mm-hmm. and Triumphant. They do have some awesome comics, which I guess was the Rob Liefeld.
What? The Alan Moore stuff?
Really?
So I don't know, but I don't know their relationship. Like, they list them on, maybe they're the agent if you want to do film and TV. There was mm-hmm. Jeremiah is a television property.
Oh, I love that. I like that show, yeah.
That I guess
the first season.
That they're claiming some credit for. Plus some of the live adaptation of Dylan Dog.
Okay.
Wow.
The movie there? Yeah.
Was some of the stuff they've done. But I'd heard of Jeremiah vaguely. I don't think I'd seen it, though.
That was the one with the guy from 90210, yeah. The dead guy now. What's his name? Luke Perry?
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. It's an apocalyptic show. It was really good. It was him and the guy, I think, from Family Matters. Was his other, well, there's his friend in it. But the first season was amazing. Second season, not as good. But yeah, it was a high-quality show. I think HBO.
I did pick up, I remember back in the day, I did read some of Ghosting and The Weapon, which were two. The Weapon was Fred Van Lente and Scott Koblish about a guy. And I just thought, I liked that they had gotten, you know, like proper art. Like, if you're going to do this, they went and got people that are good. Like Scott Koblish, I, you know, still like his work today. Again, someone that's worked, you know, Marvel, DC, all over the place. Like, It would be easy, I think, to have one of these companies and just hire people you've not heard of so they can pay them nothing and then have... I thought these guys all were quality professionals behind them. And that's not to knock new people. Like, new people need entries, too. Like, I read tons of Kickstarters by new people and new breakout artists and stuff. But I like when a company who's clearly... not just about comics, also recognizes that they might need to package their stuff.
Were they really ever about comics?
I don't know. I'm skeptical, but I'm not going to say that they weren't or weren't. But yeah, I wanted to shout out that, but I think we're in a good spot, unless anyone has any final things. I think we're a good place to wrap this up.
Nope.
I wanted to thank you guys. Thank the listeners, too. Kevin, do you have your catchphrase?
In 2020, safely read some indie comic books.
Yeah, everybody stay safe, and we'll hopefully see you soon.